I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 195 for the weekend starting 20 October 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, the Master Deeds leak scandal and what a story it is.
What a story indeed. Also this week, the Zuma wrecking ball is at it again. 5G smartphones are coming and Huawei's new phones.
It's Friday. It's time to talk tech. Let's get the show on the road.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
So I think this has quite possibly been the busiest week I have had, certainly in many, many years. It's been insane.
Done a few podcasts as well.
This is my seventh podcast of the week. It's been very, very busy and lots of big breaking stories.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest by far and possibly story of the contender for story of the year, of course, is the Master Deeds leak. Which broke on Wednesday, and we're going to be talking about that in the podcast in some detail. But before we get into all of that, let's do our quiz. Do you want to do the first question, Rehat?
Sure. The first question. The records of how many South Africans were subject of South Africa's biggest ever data leak this week?
Jacob Zuma this week replaced his communications minister again. Who is the new minister?
The third question. Who was this week appointed as the new CEO of ICASA?
Which semiconductor company this week announced it has developed and tested a chipset for 5G for use in mobile phones?
The last question in this week's quiz. Which tech company had a successful listing on the JSE this week?
As always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. So, Rehat, you were mentioning all the podcasts this week. it's been crazy. All these podcasts scheduled for this week, and then of course on top of that we've had all the breaking news.
Oh yeah.
Plus schedule some podcasts around that breaking news. So it's been a busy time. Just to maybe highlight a few of those podcasts, I moderated a session at the University of Pretoria. Earlier this week, I think it was on Tuesday. The days are sort of melting into each other now. It was arranged by the South African Institute of Electrical Engineers and had some four great panelists on it. I was the moderator of the panel, and it was a discussion on the state of digital terrestrial television in South Africa. Really interesting presentation. If you're interested in some of the technical detail of where we're at and what still needs to be done and how we can do it, it's well worth going to have a listen to that. If you're in broadcasting, it's a must listen. Just generally, if you're interested in spectrum issues, in project management around this, where we are at the moment, not very far down the road is the answer, but what still needs to be done. It's a great discussion by four top minds in the broadcasting industry. Yeah. We had William Stuckey there, who is a former ICASA counselor, now an independent consultant. We had Aldred Dreyer, who works for Centec. I think he's in a business development role there. Mm. We had Lynn Mansfield, who's the chairman of SADIBA, or the Southern African Digital Broadcasting Association, and also the deputy chairman, Gerard Petrick. So those four gentlemen made up the panel. Mm. They gave some presentations, and then I hosted a panel discussion and Q&A in a lecture hall at the University of Pretoria on Tuesday night. So we recorded the whole thing. And that's online, and I'm actually surprised at how well it's done. It's quite a technical subject, but it's been one of the best downloaded podcasts we've recorded.
Fantastic.
Which surprised me a little bit, given the technical nature of the subject and the fact that it's maybe a little bit, it's quite specific and technical. But I suppose there's an audience that's looking for that.
Oh, yeah. And, no, there's definitely an audience hungry for the technical information, because it gets usually get diluted so much for news.
You know? Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of the sort of general news that gets covered on DTT, you're just seeing headline stuff. These guys really delve down deep into what the issues are. Once we've gone through and William in his presentation spoke to this, we've gone through the digital migration process, there has to be a further migration, which I don't think has really been covered in the media, and that's something called restacking or digital migration. Because once this happens, all the digital TV channels are going to be sitting in a whole bunch of different spectrum and some of it in the spectrum that's going to be reallocated for mobile broadband. So once the analog signals are switched off after the dual illumination process, there has to be a restacking of the digital channels to push them into lower frequencies so that the digital dividend spectrum can then be freed up for broadband. So fascinating debate, and if it's a subject that interests you, I highly recommend going to listen to that podcast. Two other podcasts I just want to mention briefly. I had a great chat with Roger McCleary. Do you know Roger? Have you met Roger?
No, I don't think so.
He's a veteran motoring journalist. He's been covering motoring since the 1950s.
Sure.
I met him last week at Audi in Santon at a press conference with their MD, and he had a debate with the chap from Audi about electric cars, etc., and it was a really interesting debate. So I thought, let's get Roger on the podcast.
Nice, yes.
So I went to see him at his home in near Northcliffe this week, and we sat down for an hour and we just rapped on cars and electric cars and autonomous cars and where the whole industry is going. And it was a really interesting discussion from someone who knows his subject intimately. Mm. So if motoring's your interest and you're particularly interested in electric cars and their application in South Africa, what's happening in terms of the rollout of infrastructure network for recharging and all that sort of stuff, go have a listen to Roger. And the last podcast, which I also enjoyed thoroughly, was an interview I did with Simon Brown. Simon is an investor. He's the founder of a website called justonelap.com. Mm. And they do financial education. Simon's a trader on the JSE. He's very active on Twitter. And we had a chat about tech stocks and investing in technology. So we went through five or six international and then five or six local tech stocks, and we looked at them through the prism of whether they are a good investment opportunities or not. So internationally, we looked at companies like Amazon and Microsoft and Facebook and Apple and one or two others. And locally, we looked, I think, I'm not going to get all the names now, but companies like AdaptIT, EOH, Ultron, MTN, Vodacom, and a few others. So if stock market investing is your thing, go have a listen to that.
Or if you want to learn some more, it sounds fantastic.
No, it was a great podcast, and we're certainly seeing it in the podcast download numbers. They are soaring, which is great news. So our podcast distribution partner, Iono.fm, we distribute all our podcasts, along with many other podcasters in South Africa, and radio stations distribute their content through Iono. I mentioned in, I think it was last week or the week before, that if you have a Samsung Galaxy S8 and possibly some other Android models, you may have encountered problems downloading the podcasts on your phone. Pocket Casts gave an error called Handshake, failed. I tried something called CastBox, which is a big Chinese-made, fast-growing podcast platform, and that simply refused to download the podcasts. Anyway, the good news is the team at Iono has been working on this, and the problem is now fixed. So if you have an S8, please feel free to fire up Pocket Casts again, or whatever app you happen to use on that device.
Remember, kids, the shows never expire. You can get them anytime.
Well said, Richard. And so it was something to do with an HTTPS error. It was some configuration thing they had to do on their server, as expected, which they have now done. And hopefully Samsung issues an update to their phones soon to fix the problem that caused the issue.
Yeah.
But the great news is you can now get back onto your podcasts on your fancy S8. And before we get onto the news, one last issue, and I thought it might be worth just mentioning that it's update week. My word, there are a lot of downloads. Thank goodness for fiber, is all I can
say. And it happened quite quickly if you have fiber. If not, I feel sorry for you.
Yes, indeed. So Windows 10 FCU, which is what I've started to call it, the Fall Creators Update, released yesterday. Big download. Took over an hour to update my TV. My desktop, I haven't updated yet because I've just been so busy, and my laptop also probably about 45 minutes. I haven't really had a chance to play with it yet. The biggest feature seems to be the integration with mobile devices, iOS and Android. I have not used it yet, so I can't report back on it, how I'm finding it. Maybe we can find a slot in the podcast next week to chat a bit about
that. I think we should. Yeah, I'll also play with it over the next few days.
Okay, cool. And then, of course, the other big update, I wasn't even expecting it to arrive until I saw my Creative Cloud app fire up and start downloading stuff, is Adobe Creative Cloud 2018 release.
And that's got me really excited.
Yeah, big updates there. I haven't used any of the new apps yet except for Audition, and I didn't notice anything new in Audition at a first glance, but it certainly looks like Lightroom has received a major update. It now seems to be a cloud-based service rather than an application. Well, it is an application, but it's linked to a service.
No, cloud-based,
So I guess they're trying to take on Google Photos, but more at the high end.
Yes, and I think what they're doing with this is it's going to give you all the power to edit your photographs, and if your device doesn't have the power, I'm sure you'll be able to use the cloud-based server to do that for you.
I haven't checked if there are updates to the Android and iPhone apps yet. If there aren't, I'm sure they're coming as well.
Yeah, I know. They usually follow very quickly afterwards. I'm excited about the video stuff. The VR, they've improved the VR in the Premiere Pro suite. So Premiere Pro software. So
I did fire up Premiere Pro, and that's also that changed quite a bit. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm really excited about. And I mean, they always improve this, and I don't mind paying that amount of money every month because I use it every day. And really, the updates have been pretty impressive over the last few years.
That was always the concern when they went to the cloud software as a service model, that you'd pay the service fee and the updates wouldn't really come anymore. But no, they are keeping them up to date. I made the mistake on my desktop PC of firing up all of the new apps at once out of the app. And my desktop sounded like a Boeing 747 about to take off. I mean, with particularly Premiere Pro, Audition, and Photoshop all starting at the same time, you must know it was really taxing my computer, especially on it's a hot day today, so the fan was working
overtime.
Yeah. If any of the listeners have any strong views on Adobe CC 2018 or Windows 10 FCU, let us know your thoughts. info@techcentral.co.za. But let's get into the week's news. And there is a lot to talk about this week. Let's start with Master Deeds. So Troy Hunt is a researcher and an InfoSec specialist based in Australia. He seems to work for Microsoft, I think he works at Microsoft. I stand to be corrected there. But he on Tuesday started tweeting that he had found a major leak of data pertaining to personal records of South African citizens. At the time, he was saying that the database file that he found on the dark web contained 30 million plus records. He subsequently realized, after having another look at the database, that in fact it contained the records of 75 million people, of which just over 60 million are South Africans, both alive and dead. And so he then put out a tweet saying, any South African tech journalists who can help me get the story out there. I was in back-to-back podcasts at the time, but luckily Andrew Fraser, who's a friend of the show, has been on a number of times, jumped at the opportunity, and he has been doing fantastic work around the story. Tech Central was the first media outlet to break the news about the leak on Wednesday morning, thanks to Andrew's hard work, and it's just been running since then. There's so much to this. I'm not going to go through all of it in the podcast today because we'd use up the whole show and plenty more just talking about it. Yeah. But there's plenty of stuff on Tech Central to delve into on this. Some of the initial reports that came out suggested that this might be associated, or the leak may have came from a company called Dracor Data Sciences, based just up the road here, actually, in Randburg. And but further sleuthing and some fantastic work by the team Dominic White at
SensePost.
And his team at that company did some serious sleuthing, and others have been sleuthing on this as well. I think others may have reached the same conclusions that SensePost reached. It was then determined that the leak appeared to come from a website or an IP address owned and managed, hosted at Hetzner, but owned and managed by a Pretoria-based real estate company called Jigsaw Holdings. I haven't spoken to Jigsaw. I've attempted to speak to their lawyer, but he doesn't respond to WhatsApp messages. Some media outlets have spoken to them, and they have admitted that, in fact, yes, we were the responsible party here. There was a web front end where you could simply go in and type in your ID number or anyone's ID number and get a whole lot of personal information. including telephone numbers, email addresses, and even in some cases, salary information.
Yeah.
So very some sensitive information in there. And obviously, data that you just don't want to get in the hands of people who could then use it, perhaps to add you to spam lists, or worse, who can use it to impersonate you, which is a huge problem overseas.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of information shouldn't be public. I mean,
no.
The combination of the information should never be together. But how does a company like that end up with effectively an Excel spreadsheet with everybody in South Africa's details on it? I mean,
yeah, it wasn't an Excel spreadsheet.
No, I'm just essentially that's what it was.
I think it was. I stand to correction here, but I think it was a MySQL database.
Yeah.
But it,
it looks the same to the untrained.
That's the big question, right? That's the big question, and I think Jigsaw Holdings needs to hold a press conference soon to go through all the issues. I'd imagine they're under enormous pressure at the moment. The National Credit Regulator, a team from the National Credit Regulator, visited Dracor yesterday afternoon and interrogated their CEO and staff, certain of their staff, about this leak. So I presume the National Credit Regulator has also visited Jigsaw Holdings. We don't know that, but I suspect that that's the case. So there are definitely investigations going on already. I got a tip-off yesterday that the Hawks and the National Prosecuting Authority had raided Dracor yesterday afternoon. That, in fact, was not the case. My source had it a bit off. We did not run a story on it. Let me emphasize that. What happened was that it was, in fact, the National Credit team from the National Credit Regulator who came and visited them and interrogated them to find out exactly, from the Dracor perspective, what had happened here. I had also spoken, by the way, to Inspector Mulawudzi, who's the spokesperson for the Hawks, and he also said there have been no raids from the Hawks related to this matter, at least not yet. The Hawks did, however, say, according to a report on News 24, that they are investigating. So the processes are, the wheels are turning on the process, and I think the story's got a long way to run still.
A lot of questions to be answered.
There are a lot of questions. And you asked, what was a real estate company doing with this information? And that question has not been adequately answered yet.
They were providing a service, right, where people could check up.
No, they weren't.
Weren't they?
No, this was just exposed to the web. It was their data. It was, I don't know why it was exposed to the web. It's possible, it was possibly done for people working for their, they own a number of estate agents, including AIDA and others, Realty One, I think.
Yeah.
Well-known.
But they use it to query the database, obviously.
And presumably real estate agents were using it to query the database. I'm just guessing. This is just guesswork here. But I would imagine that was the case. Now, apparently there was also a back door, if that's the correct terminology. Dominic White from SensePost is probably going to send me a message and tell me.
You'll write your mail right now.
Yeah, there was another way into the system, apparently, and that remained open for quite some time. They closed down the web front end of this thing pretty promptly after it was discovered. But this back door, and again, I don't know if that's the right terminology, was there for some time longer. I believe it's now been shut down. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it's too late.
The data's out there.
The data's
right?
out there. Someone's taken it. Someone will have taken it. The moment this story started to break, it was there for a long time on the web. Someone who's enterprising could find it. I mean, Andrew, as he said himself in a podcast I recorded with him, Dominic, and John Tullett from the RDC on Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday evening, as they pointed out, as Andrew pointed out, he's not a hacker or doesn't possess any particularly advanced skills. He's just an ordinary guy on the street, and he was able to get into this system, and he was able to run these queries. So someone with sufficient technical knowledge could have got this database, and we have to assume that they did.
Somebody must.
And no doubt it's going to be on sale somewhere on the dark web.
Yeah. Everyone sooner rather than later. Details.
Exactly.
Do we know what the? I mean, did anybody say what the website was built on? I mean, because this seems to me like, a web developer who's not really skilled enough to keep the website up to date. I mean, there's things that happen all the time. It's not just about building a WordPress site. Or
as Andrew pointed out, this website was horrendously built from a security perspective. Okay. It was like knocking down a house with your hand. I can't remember the exact word Andrew used in the article he filed for us on Tech Central on Wednesday afternoon about that, or Wednesday evening about that. But he pointed out that this was really, really shockingly bad from a security perspective.
I've seen this kind of thing before, you know, with many companies. Not all of them are sensitive data, but there is secure information that, you know, can be easily accessed. And the website isn't kept secure in a way. I mean, there's many ways to put a firewall on something like that, but that's a very basic step to take.
Yes.
Somebody obviously dropped the ball on that one.
Oh yeah,
in terms of you know, keeping that site secure, and people don't realize the impact of unpatched servers or unpatched software on servers.
Now, the other interesting angle to this whole thing is that there's a piece of legislation that's in the process of being introduced called the POPI Act. Mm. POPI, P-O-P-I, stands for the Promotion of – no, not Promotion. It stands for the Protection of Personal Information Act. And this act was designed specifically with things like this in mind. Now, that act is not fully implemented. It's only going to be fully implemented sometime next year. That act creates something called the Information Regulator. That's going to be chaired or headed up by Panzi Glakula, who has been appointed already. But that information regulator is not in effect yet. So I think possibly Jigsaw Holdings is quite lucky that the POPI Act is not in force, because the Act not only allows for fines running into millions of rands, but can also impose prison sentences. A judge can also impose a prison sentence for negligence like this. So it's very serious indeed.
This is the most serious version of a breach that we could have, because it's not a small selection of people.
Okay. Yeah, this is South Africa's Equifax. A few years ago, maybe it wasn't even that far ago, long ago, there was the big story about the Steyr-Kinekor data breach. Mm. I think that involved about 7 million records and not as much information as was disclosed through this leak. This involves over 60 million records. So basically every South African is affected by this. And as Troy Hunt tweeted this morning, a large number of minors running into millions and millions and millions of names of children are also contained in this information. And one wonders why a property company requires the details of minors. Why was it given to them in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know that chain of events. I went to record a podcast this morning. It's already up on Tech Central with Chantel Fraser, who is the CEO of Draycore Data Sciences. Some reports suggested that Draycore may have been responsible for the leak initially, and I think people drew that conclusion by looking at the various headers in the database and comparing those headers with headers in a database owned and operated by Draycore. So it was perhaps easy to draw that conclusion, but it appears that that conclusion was wrong. Draycore is now threatening to sue a website, iAfrican, that wrote a story asking whether Draycore was behind this. I did a podcast with Chantel this morning, and she said that they will be filing papers in the High Court this afternoon against the owner or the publisher of that website. Whether they go through with that or not, I don't know. It's now 3 p.m. on Friday, so if it is happening, it's happening right now as we speak. Mm. So Draycore is please go and listen to the interview with Chantel Fraser.
It's a great podcast.
They do a range of things, but one of them is I'm not going to get the word correct. It was not data cleansing. It was like a data enhancement type of service. So they'd take a bunch of information about people, and then they'd flesh it out with more information. Mm. And 3 years ago, they did some work with another company in the group, which is no longer around, did some work with this property company. I can't remember the term. I think it was data enhancement or something like that. I'll get it up now. But she said that they did some work, but they've had nothing to do with Jigsaw since then. And she is adamant that Draycore had nothing to do with the leak. But we still don't know the full chain of events, how this data got in the hands of this property company in the first place, whether Jigsaw should have had this data, was it rightfully entitled to have this data, is this data that a realty company can simply go to a credit bureau and buy. Because credit bureaus sell this data to other companies.
It's a secure way of giving access to it.
But they've got a lot of, as Chantal Fraser said in the podcast, there's a whole lot of rules around how you access this data. You can't, man on the street, can't go and buy this data from a credit bureau hoping to spam everyone on the list. There are a whole lot of rules around this. And apparently rules as well around how the information must be protected from a security perspective.
Mm.
I'd love to see what those rules are from the credit bureaus to get an idea of whether it covered incidents like this.
Yeah,
I would imagine that it would, but I don't know the answer to that question.
But see, the problem is a SQL file or any database file, or any file really, is easy to copy if you have enough time.
Yeah.
The chain of command is broken at that point. So any company who obtained it legally, if there was a weak point with that person in charge of that, or the chain of command between where it's supposed to be secure and somebody got access to a quick copy, it'll take a while to copy, but
yes.
It's not impossible.
Well, it's only 27 gigabytes. I mean, on a fiber fostered line, you can download that very quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're on the server copying it into a file root somewhere to download it later, I mean, that's
But not good. I think, it's a pity the information regulator is not in place yet, because this is a great investigation.
This is exactly why we need it.
Yeah. We'll have to see whether they pick this up once. But by next year, I mean, the story's going to be so old by then. The National Credit Regulator is on it, so maybe that's where we're going to see some progress on this. But I think what needs to happen next is Jigsaw needs to start talking about what's happened here. If someone from that company is listening to the podcast, then call a press conference, guys. Let's talk about it. I think Dracor has done a very good job of the way they've managed this crisis. Because, I mean, this has been a big crisis for them as well. What they've done is they've been very open and communicative. The podcast this morning, they've been speaking to other journalists. They were effectively, their name was sullied in the market, and they've dealt with it in what I think is the best way possible, and that's by talking. You don't clam up and pretend it didn't happen. So kudos to them for that, but I think Jigsaw needs to, and I'm sure they're in crisis, they must be in crisis mode right now. But at some point soon, it's Friday today, early next week, I think we need to see some communication from them on what happened exactly.
My other question, I guess my last question is, what can we do, those of us who have been compromised?
There is nothing you can do, Rehat. There's nothing
you can do. No password to change.
Your information's out there.
Update. It's out there.
If you want to know, by the way, you can check if you were part of the... part of the leak. If you go to haveibeenpwned.com, so replace the O in owned with a P, haveibeenpwned.com, and then type in any of the email addresses that you happen to have, and look for the South African flag in the list that appears below, and that'll tell you whether you have been included in the breach.
Is there no way to enter is there no service that gives you access to put in your ID number?
No, they have not done that. And I believe that, in fact, Troy Hunt is behind this website, Have I Been Pwned? And
I'm sure they'll set up something. It should be easy.
No, I don't think they're going to. I don't think they want to, because, again, you're going to be exposing. If you could check through an email address, then you can at least see whether you've been compromised. And pretty much every South African has been compromised. So put in your email address there, Rehat, and see what it says.
About 80% of my old email addresses are pwned, but...
Okay. So it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
I'd be surprised
if... But I've seen it before. I mean, my mail email address has been part of it. But, I mean, it's a generic email I use for a lot of things. So, I mean, it's...
Yes. I'm actually amazed. It's a great website, this. I'm amazed at how many services have been compromised. I type in my Gmail address, which I use for a lot of
that's the same.
Website logins, and I'm just looking here. Dropbox, Last.fm, the Master Deed South Africa breach or leak, Modern Business Solutions, I don't even know who they are, a large MongoDB file containing tens of millions of accounts were shared publicly on Twitter.
Sure.
Trillion, which was or still is a instant messaging app, and Zomato, which is a... restaurant review rating, thing. It's a great website to check if you've if you've been compromised in any way. And it's another lesson, this, by the way, in why you must use a password manager. You have to use a password manager. It's actually, if you are not using a password manager, you are asking for trouble.
Your password is then not strong enough, which means it is very likely that somebody can get into it with a timeous
deadline. You need to use unguessable passwords, and the only real way of doing that is to use a machine-generated password.
And LastPass does it for you. It generates, all of these password managers does it for you. They generate a long, you just say how many characters you want. And
It does it. And the good ones will alert you when there's been a security breach. So you'll get a message popping up through the app saying, we are now aware of this breach. I just got it the other day. I used Dashlane. I haven't seen one on the Master Deeds. I don't know if it's relevant to the Master Deeds, but I had one that popped up on Dashlane the other day about the Discuss breach that was reported last week. And so it allows you to change your passwords. And you should not reuse a password across a single website. Every single website you log into must have a different password. I think that's probably the most important lesson out of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing, the concern about this is the impersonation angle. Many call centers, the bank is a bit different because they're a little tighter on these sort of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But you phone your cell phone company and they'll, let's check who you say you are. What's your email address? Where do you live? That's usually what they ask you.
But they also give you some of this information.
It's in the database.
Which makes you think they're legit and then
Exactly. And it's in this leak. So someone who has ill intent can get this information about you, and they'll have a whole lot range of info on your email address, at the very least they'll have your email address, your phone number, probably your residential address, possibly your postal address.
Yeah.
And then you can use that to phone a call center and say, hey, I'm this person and I want to do this.
So basically the way out of this is to move and not be born.
Yes.
And then you'll be fine.
I don't know if moving will help.
I guess.
The only way to really secure yourself from this is to die. But I think the message here is that you need to be more vigilant. You need to be aware that this has happened, and you need to be conscious of any attempts to swindle you out of, attempting to defraud you. And I think the message for business is they need to know this information is out there, and they need to find better ways of authenticating you.
Definitely. And let's not forget, just on a side note, TransUnion is a fantastic site. You get once a year, you get a free credit report. You can buy one after that.
TransUnion, they're a big credit bureau.
But that lists all the accounts and closed, past, and current that you have. So it's a good way to see if someone's open a cell phone account in your name.
Right. That's a good
a clothing account in your name. Because they list them, then you can see if it's open, closed.
Mm.
What the status of your
that's
payments
a good tip.
And that kind of thing.
No,
it's a
can
great
you just
service.
Do it through their website?
Yeah, just register. It's very easy. I do it once a year, just around tax season, out of habit.
Right.
It's just part of my yearly cataloging of paperwork. And it's also a good way to keep an eye on things.
So do go and have a listen to that podcast. I recorded via Skype with Dominic White from SensePost, John Tullett from the IDC, and, of course, Andrew Fraser, where we were unpacking what was happening here in real time. In fact, we were breaking the news as it was happening that this had been pinpointed to an IP owned by Jigsaw. It's a great podcast. So lots to listen to this week. Hope you can squeeze them all in. This weekend I'm catching up on all the email I haven't been able to do this week because it's been so busy. Let's move on. Let's take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So there's been other news this week apart from the leak. I've been so busy with the leak, it's almost the other stuff's almost faded to the background.
Everything else is.
But our wonderful president has been up to his usual nonsense this week, and he has once again redeployed his communications minister. Once again, I think the current one had only been in office for a couple of months. She was meant to tackle the digital migration thing. I think precisely nothing has happened since Faith Mutambi left as communications minister. She's now at public service and administration, where by all accounts she's doing an awful job. But the new minister, Mamaloko Kubai, installed this week. And she is taking over the SABC management or oversight of the SABC. And she is also now responsible for our digital migration project. So I despair. I actually despair.
Does she have any experience in the telecommunication industry?
I think she was the head of the, or the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Communications in Parliament. So she has some experience in the sector. Thankfully, she knows some of the issues. But you top and change ministers like this. I see even Gwede Mantashe, who's the Secretary General of the ANC, slammed Zuma, saying you can't do this because, you know, the ministers don't get a chance to actually get going. You got to get momentum, you got to meet people, you got to understand the issues, this takes months.
So, yeah, now we're back a year, about 12 months worth of catching up. And
so now he's reshuffled his cabinet again, it appears to protect himself rather than anything to do with the interests of South Africa. He's basically raised a big middle finger to the South African ICT industry. He doesn't care. By chopping and changing these ministers, he's setting things back and back and back and back, and we're already so far behind. We are so far behind, it's not even a joke anymore. Aldred Dreyer, at the DTT panel discussion that I was hosting at the University of Pretoria last week, mentioned the son of some Sentech executive who was at the launch when they first switched on the first DTT signal in South Africa, and one of the executive's sons was there. He was 5 years old, little kid, at the switch on, and they met again recently. And where we are in the process now, we still haven't started the project is in limbo at the moment. And this five-year-old kid is now graduating from the University of Pretoria. That's how much time has gone past.
It's a generation, essentially, of that kid not having digital, any TV based on digital broadband, and digital
broadcasting.
Broadcasting, yeah, sorry. That's a scary thought to put into perspective.
It just puts it in perspective, exactly. The years and years and years we've wasted on this project. But what this shows is the president just doesn't care. This project is so far behind. It's so important to South Africa's economy that this spectrum is given to the operators so that we can roll out broadband. We've got a conference coming up in December. I need to reshuffle my cabinet again because I allegedly, I'll just put those words in front, have to do some dodgy deal with Russia on nuclear. And so let's reshuffle again and move our ministers around.
Before then, yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we are. Another mess. Another fine mess. Anyway, we are just, what's the date today? 20th of October. We are exactly 2 months from knowing the outcome of the ANC's elective conference. And then hopefully this madness is going to end.
Oh, please, I want something else to talk about. There's so many amazing things happening in this world.
Yes.
Technology-wise, and especially.
And so many amazing things that could happen in this country if we could just unlock it.
It is like we're taking one step forward, three steps back. It really feels like that. And with the wrong people in those very important public, should I emphasize, positions, yet people are still out to look after themselves. And that really is what all of this comes down to, people looking out for themselves, not for the greater good of the country, the people that they're serving.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be an interesting 18 months to 24 months ahead, because we've got the elective conference. If Dlamini Zuma comes out of that, then I think we're all in very big trouble. Very big trouble, and we're going to have a very gloomy Christmas. If Ramaphosa wins, then I think and he fires Zuma in January, I think 2018 could be a great year.
Yeah.
And then, of course, just 18 months from now, just over 18 months from now, we're due to go into an election. So lots of drama to come in this country. Never a dull moment. Let's put it that way.
Look, if I can sound a little bit what's the word I'm looking for? Optimistic. You know, things go in 7-year cycles. The last time South Africa really stood together was with the World Cup, 2010. It's now 7 years later. We're almost at the bottom of the pit that we can go with our current government. Or with a president, at least.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
I'm hopeful. You know, 2018, new beginnings, if we can get this conference right.
Yeah.
So have a good 2018,
and
at least.
Business has been holding back investment. I mean, you look at their balance sheets, they are full of cash. I mean, these companies are not investing. There's so much uncertainty in this country. If we can just get some certainty back into the country, a real president who's going to lead the country, and stability in government, and proper policy formulation, then there's so much... There's so much backed up, dammed up, waiting to be unleashed and invested and et cetera, that I think, you know, I'm optimistic that we'd have a mini boom, potentially.
Yeah, definitely.
But then the mess that Ramaphosa, assuming he becomes the next president, is inheriting from Zuma is so large that it's going to take probably a generation to fix.
Yeah, that's systematic corruption.
A destruction.
I mean, it's institutionalized.
Yeah, exactly. Institutionalized corruption, but also this wanton erosion of state institutions.
Mm.
The NPA is a classic example, but there's plenty of other examples. I mean, SAA, plenty of state-owned enterprises that have really fallen into disrepair under this Zuma administration. But let's move on. There's more exciting, more interesting things to talk about than politics. And 5G is coming. Man, I can't wait.
Yes. It'll match my fiber perfectly.
So Qualcomm announcing quite a significant story this week, I thought. Qualcomm, of course, the biggest semiconductor company making chipsets for smartphones in the world. And they really are the Intel of the mobile world. And they're announcing this week that they've taken a big step forward towards the delivery, not of 5G, but of 5G in mobile devices, in handsets. And they're saying we should start to see the first consumer 5G handsets in the market in early 2019. So that's probably before the hour of next election.
Yeah, we're going to be kept busy with the politics, so it'll come sooner than you think.
Indeed. So they've introduced something, or they've announced something called the Snapdragon X55G modem chipset, and they've tested it in the labs in, I think it's San Diego in the US, which is where the head office is, and they have used the 28 gigahertz millimeter wave frequency band to deliver gigabit class 5G transmissions through this chip. And this is a big development in the move towards offering commercial 5G handsets. Interestingly, they're doing it in the 28 gigahertz band. This is the same frequency band that COMSOL, the company we spoke about in the podcast last week, has access to. They basically own the 28 gigahertz band in South Africa.
Mm.
Quite fortuitous that they have access to it. They got it years ago, apparently, before anyone was even talking about 28 gigahertz being used for 5G. And they are, as you know, going to be rolling out a 5G network on a limited scale in Gauteng in the coming weeks. And I'm looking forward to doing a follow-up podcast with Ian Stevenson, the CEO of that company.
Yeah.
Once they have actually started to test it, we'll go through there and we'll play with it ourselves and see what it's all about. They're going to be doing it as part of a trial with live customers to start. And, they're using the 28 gigahertz band. And, 5G is coming.
Nice.
We're going to be talking a lot more about 5G
in the next
year,
It's got so many amazing implications for technology. I think it's very exciting times.
Of course, the standards aren't bedded down yet. So, I mean, there's so much detail we still need to understand about how this is all going to work and what frequencies particularly are going to be used. Because, I mean, 28 gigahertz is not you're not going to put up a big base station like you see from Vodacom or Cell C or MTN for 5G at that sort of frequency. This is going to be for in-building coverage. This is going to be for deploying on lampposts all down streets.
It's basically giving us better connectivity all the time in places that generally is problematic.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my understanding of it, at least initially, is that 5G is going to be, is going to be used in dense urban areas. So you're walking through the street here in Randburg, or you're walking through Sandton City, or you are in a dense area like a block of flats, or just a well built up area. There'll be hundreds of micro cells in that area. Yeah. Perhaps every lamppost has one, and you'll have great 5G coverage in that area. You know, because it's 28 gigahertz or 26 gigahertz, whatever happens to be used in South Africa. I think 26 gigahertz they're talking about. Yeah, it doesn't travel very far from that base station. So,
it's a strong signal. If it goes through walls, it works underground.
It doesn't go through walls.
Isn't it deep penetrating?
It's the low frequencies that go through walls, which is why the digital dividend is so important. Because in rural areas, these signals are going to have to travel a very long distance, and then they're going to have to go through a wall, which is why the lower frequencies are important. These higher frequencies are going to be better suited for short range communication.
I mean, how many shops do you still go to? I see it often, you know, concrete buildings or parking lots where your signal drops completely.
Yes.
And if, I guess it's not always inconvenient, but you could be on a call. You're often on a call, you know, going into these places.
And the cell phone companies have done a very good job of providing coverage in shopping centres.
The new developments, I've all seen them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on Telkom, but you know, and they haven't rolled out as much coverage. So I do notice in some shopping centres they don't have coverage. So I'm picking up from a tower outside the shopping centre, my signal is quite weak. But if I walk around with an MTN or Cell C or Vodacom SIM around any shopping centre here in Gauteng, signal is on four. I get a fantastic 4G signal, and that's because they've deployed microcells, if that's the right terminology, inside the shopping centres.
You can often see them in the parking lot. Santon's got a few of them hidden, you know, just above your head.
Yeah,
they've got this. You'll just see the few antennas sticking.
Yes.
Well, they've got the white box, which I've also seen around.
Yeah. I expect we'll see 5G deployed in the airport, in shopping centres. And then over time, you know, all these street lights out here will become base stations.
Oh, there's been a few, yeah. There's quite a few around. The ones with
already,
the cell tower.
Yes.
Now, I guess people don't always want them in front of their house because they could be unsightly, but it's the way of the future, unfortunately. You know, if you want connectivity, you're going to have to to deal with it.
Yes.
But anyway, you can't have three or four towers covering a city like it used to be back in the day.
By the way, I saw a correspondence between our local councillor here and someone who was complaining about these street pole towers, saying that the complainant was saying our tower, you know, our homes are getting irradiated, we're all going to get cancer. And I saw the local councillor just slap them down in this correspondence. He said, "You don't know what you're talking about. This is, I have spoken extensively to the cell phone companies. This is much lower frequency than you get out of the bigger towers." And he actually comprehensively debunked all of the complaints from this person. I was quite impressed by it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think misinformation is obviously hurting that side of it. And
yeah, it is. It's making it more difficult to do the rollouts. But I think in most cases, it's people not wanting this unsightly thing.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, you don't notice it after a while, I guess. You know,
and the street pole ones are, you know, they look kind of like.
It's just a box that's next to it. Go paint it, man. Paint it a nice color. Camouflage, nobody will see it.
Bright pink. And the last story, very briefly, that I wanted to chat to about this week was the new Huawei Mate 10 device. It's quite an exciting phone, this. It's a phablet. It's really big. But they've got two models that they've brought out, and it's the 10 Pro that excites me. I don't think they're bringing the Mate 10 here. They're only going to bring the 10 Pro, and then they're going to bring the Porsche design version to this market.
To go with your VW. It looks like a nice phone.
It does. It does. What I really like about the Samsung, what Samsung did with the Galaxy Note, sorry, the Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus, was they went for a much taller form factor than on other phones. I find all other phones a bit boxy now. It's a fantastic format, and they've done it here within the new Pro version. This Pro SKU comes with 6 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage, and the special Porsche Design Edition comes with 256 gigabytes of storage.
Nice.
We don't have pricing yet. They're going to launch these phones in South Africa on the 6th of November, so we'll go to that launch. But they look pretty exciting. They've designed the cameras once again with Leica. 20 megapixel dual rear cameras, 4,000 milliamp hour battery, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
My one complaint about the older Mate models was the screen resolution was a little bit on the low side, which helped with the battery life, but you could notice a little bit of pixelation on the screen, which you don't notice on the higher density displays. They've addressed that with this new version. So the Mate 10 has a 2560 by 1440 resolution, which I think is the same or similar to the S8. And then the Pro has a 2160 by 1080 resolution, which is a little bit lower, interestingly. Taller form factor, much taller form factor. And the phones are, the Mate is 5.9 inches, and the bigger one, or the taller one, the Pro, is 6 inches in size. I'm really looking forward to seeing these phones. So I'm going to go through to the launch and have a look at them. And of course, almost bezel-less designs have become the norm now.
Yeah, beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
So, quite an exciting phone. We'll have some exciting news about other new phones coming into this market.
Soon. I agree. There's going to be some very interesting things coming. That's why I'm excited. I think we're really in a space where not only local availability of these devices, but just, we're living in the future. I mean, when did you think you're going to have a device in your hand that, got a massive screen? It's just beautiful, high-res PPI and bezel-less design. I'm just a geek. I'm just getting excited about it.
You're getting very excited.
I'm still actually wanting to get hold of that Nokia, because I think that was still a phone that piqued my interest.
Yeah, the Nokia 8.
Yeah, that's it.
My wife is due for an upgrade, and she's thinking of getting the Nokia 8. It's a very nice device. Mm. It's a very, very nice device. And certainly the immediate Android updates really appeal to me.
Yeah, that is very cool.
That's our news. Let's move on to our regular features of the week. And our winner this week, I thought I'd pick Troy Hunt.
Oh, yes.
The Australian InfoSec researcher. First of all, for doing a great job around the disclosures around this. But also for being so communicative about it and talking to South African users. He's posted a fantastic video, which we've also posted on Tech Central. He posted on YouTube this morning, where he explains in detail what South Africans need to know. Very proactive, very communicative. Go check out that video. It's very good. And he's been active on Twitter. He's been talking actively to South African tech journalists about the story. I've been following him on Twitter. Looks like an all-round good guy as well. So that's Troy Hunt. Give him a follow on Twitter. It's worth it, actually. He pointed out, by the way, just for fun, he pointed out this morning, he tweeted, and it took me a while, but he tweeted that KFC has been very smart in the people it follows. I'm just trying to find the link here. So... here it is. So KFC, which is the chicken company, follows only 11 people on Twitter. And Troy Hunt tweeted, the accounts at KFC chose to follow are smart. So I went and had a look. It took me a while. But he's following Jerry Horner, Melanie Brown. KFC is following Jerry Horner, Melanie Brown, Emma Bunton, and Melanie C in that order. And, of course, they're all the singers from the Spice Girls. And Victoria Beckham, I beg your pardon. And then he's following Herb Schribner, Herb Wesson, Herb Waters, Herb Dean, Herb Sendek, and Herb Alford. It took me a while. It took me a while, but 11 herbs and spices.
11 herbs and spices, When you said Spice Girls, that is very cool.
That is brilliant.
Clever marketing.
Nice. Well done, KFC. Well done, KFC. Very clever marketing.
Probably still won't buy your burgers Not yet.
Better than McDonald's, I'll put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we have three losers this week. I couldn't choose between them. I really couldn't choose between them. And they're all deserving losers. So let's go through them quickly. Jacob Zuma for reshuffling his cabinet again and giving us yet another communications minister. Jigsaw Holdings, for obvious reasons. And the South Africans, all of us, been implicated by this data leak. So, we're pretty much all losers this week.
Thanks for playing the game. You lost. Insert another coin. That's where we are right now.
Indeed. So, with all of this craziness of this week, Rechard, I have not had time to find a pick, I'm afraid. So, it's all up to you. The pressure's all on your shoulders.
It's a good one. I came across this thing on a Kickstarter, so I haven't paid with this yet, but... I think I'm going to get one. I definitely think I'm going to get one of these things. It's called the Wiral, W-I-R-A-L, Lite cable camera. Now, if you've seen any of the show, any of the rugby matches or soccer games in the stadiums, they do a lot with in the World Cup, I think they started it here. But it's essentially a camera on a rope that's span or cable that's spanned between various parts of the stadium. And the operator can, in a drone-like fashion, without all the dangers of a drone, get aerial shots. You can pull the camera up, put it close. I mean, you can go with, you know, with the ProTech that they use in stadiums, you can go right up to a player's face because you can pull the tension between the four anchor points.
Oh, wow.
Or the three anchor points, whichever they use. Now, the Wirral Light is essentially a pocket camera version of it. Now, it's a very simple design. It's essentially a camera rig that you string onto a piece of wire that you can tie between two buildings, two trees. Two people can hold it. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can set this thing up. But it gives you really cool aerial shots in very tiny, cramped spaces that you can't get a drone in. Mm. I think they're onto something. It's got a normal tripod mount at the bottom, so you can mount a GoPro, you can mount a DSLR, you can mount a Osmo, which is a stabilized handheld camera. I assume the next version they're going to bring out for this is going to be a gimbalized camera. I wouldn't be surprised if a company like DJI buys them out, to be honest with you, because this technology fits in very, very nicely with this kind of stuff that they're doing. You can go check it out on Kickstarter. Might not be a bad idea to actually sign up if you've got the cash. For $199, you'll get the first version of the cam with a basic kit and camera and the right mounts. So for $200, which would be just under 10 grand, you know, it's
$200 is $200.
No, just $200. I'm saying under 10 grand with import duties.
Oh, geez, it would be under seven.
Under seven,
under six.
I would imagine South Africa will be more expensive, but okay. If you paid it for $199 and you get it via this price, yes, what, 7 grand? The retail price will probably be more around the $250 price range.
Okay. It does look very cool. If you go onto Kickstarter, we'll include a link, obviously, in the show notes.
Yeah.
But there's a video here demonstrating it, and it does look pretty cool. You're going to get one?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's DC Rainmaker actually tested. He's a guy that is very well known. He's like the ultimate sports kit reviewer.
Yeah.
And he puts his stuff through the paces, and he raved about it. So I can see the practical applications for shooting sport in particular, you know, mountain biking, running. It's the kind of stuff that I do. So
yeah.
This fits in very nicely with that. And I mean, it's just mounting a camera to something else that you can get a really cool angle for.
Yeah. Great stuff. I think that's our show, Rechot. We've got some great podcasts coming up next week. We're going to continue following the Master Deeds leak.
Yes.
There is a lot to run on that story still, and we've actually lined up some great podcasts next week to talk more about it. So look out for those. We've also have some big news coming next week. We're expecting the results of the SAP investigation into the allegations around the Guptas, etc. We're expecting those possibly as early as next week. They have said they're going to publish them by the end of the month, and it is today, the 20th of October. So I would expect to see them out sometime next week. If not next week, then very early the following week. So that's going to be a big year in the coming days. So lots to come. I will make time this coming week to find a pick for our show next week. let's do our quiz results. Do you want to do the first question?
Sure. Right? The first question. The records of how many South Africans were the subject of South Africa's biggest ever data leak this week? And the answer there, obviously, over 60 million records.
Jacob Zuma this week replaced his communications minister again. He was the new minister, and that's Mameluke Kubai.
The third question. Who was this week appointed as the new CEO of ICASA? And the answer there is Wellington Ngwepe.
And I was going to say on Mameluke Kubai, hopefully it's not going to be a case of goodbye soon. which semiconductor company this week announced it has developed and tested a chipset for 5G use in mobile phones, and that's Qualcomm.
And the last question in this week's quiz: which tech company had a successful listing on the JSE this week? And the answer is Foresight Holdings.
That's our show. Until next Friday, from Rechot and myself, cheers.
Ciao.